But I'm telling you, man, like the beginners now, because there's so much information and the access to the information is instant. And then some of the like world-class gear now is affordable and relatively simple to use. And, you know, the companies have done a lot better job about making things go together. And, you know, as far as like kits go and things of that sort. So people are becoming successful very, very quickly.
Welcome back to Space Junk Podcast. Dustin and I are really happy to be back making episodes again. And in this one, Dustin and I talk about beginner astronomy. And in particular, where to go and what to bring with you on an observing night. So let's get started. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Space Junk, a weekly podcast dedicated to the amazing hobby of amateur astronomy. Each week, we'll bring you interesting and fun discussions with an eye towards providing you with the latest information and advice on the tools, gadgets, software, and techniques for maximizing your enjoyment of the night sky. Your hosts are Tony Darnell from deepastronomy.space and Dustin Gibson from OPT Telescopes, a world leader in telescopes and accessories. Hey, everybody, welcome back. Dustin and I are finally back making new episodes of Space Junk Podcast. And today we're going to be talking about beginner amateur astronomy, getting into the hobby for the first time. And in particular, we want to talk about where to go and what to bring with you. So to get this topic going, Dustin and I are going to tell you what we think on these topics, as we neither one of us have any shortage of opinions. How you doing, Dustin?
Good. It is so good to be back, man, after the break. The break was much needed, you know, with the whole world kind of coming apart.
I know, right? It's just like, total system failure almost.
Yeah, it really is. It's just on and on and on. And, you know, supply chains are insane and it's not even just telescope. It's the whole world. Everybody's like in every single industry, people are dealing with just chaos. Even all the boats out at the ports right now. I mean, it's just craziness everywhere you look. But so the break was needed, but I've missed this. I'm really excited to be back and, you know, talking astronomy every week. And this is exciting. We're gonna do some things differently too, and make this a little bit more social, which I'm really excited about as well.
Right. Yeah, you'll be seeing a slightly different format with this, and we'll be posting to different platforms and things, different snippets from this recording. So please let us know what you think. There's lots of ways to do that. You could do it by email with optpodcast@deepastronomy.com. You could just send me an email, tell me what you're thinking. Also on any of the social media channels that we're posting on, of which there will be a lot. So just give us feedback. We definitely want to hear what you want to hear, and we'll be happy to put it, make an episode all the way around it. So so are you guys, are things starting to calm down a little bit on your end as far as the supply chains and all that stuff? Things are going okay?
Well, normal has a different definition now.
I can imagine. Yeah.
You know, I mean, we still have an OPT headquarters, but we're a fully remote operation now. It's going to stay that way. We're going to remain that way indefinitely. You know, and which is, it's really interesting how all of this, you know, COVID kind of forced rapid evolution on businesses, where it, you know, it made companies invest in, you know, new technologies and things to be able to work remotely. But what that did is it opened up, you know, a talent pool globally as well, which is really a powerful thing when you think about it. I mean, being able to, you know, cross out of just a locality and find talent around the world is really pretty special. So it's, I mean, it's come with, you know, so many terrible things, but also, you know, there've been a lot of, evolutions in business that I think have probably been healthy for many companies to really embrace, or at least those, you know, lucky companies that have been in a position to, and grow through. So it's come with, you know, countless challenges, and OPT hasn't been immune to that at all. But also, you know, it's forced us to look at things in a different way, which I think is always a healthy practice for a company.
Definitely. Yeah. I've been reading about a lot of people, saying something similar in their business plans, or either adapting or they're failing. So it's good to see that you guys have always been an agile company, in my opinion, and been able to
make changes where needed, and almost, you know, as far as I could tell, from the best. So it's good to see that you guys are adapting well, and you're right about the talent. Now you can get talent from anywhere in the world. You can work with the best possible people, no matter where they are. And that's, I think, also a big, huge thing too. So I agree with you on that.
Well, it is. And I mean, the time zone thing is no small thing either, right? I mean, we have a team member in Australia even, and I use that as the most extreme example. But, you know, you think about it, you know, while she's awake, it's like, well, the astronomers are here doing astronomy. And it's really pretty interesting. Even just the difference between Pacific and Eastern time zones are significant. So people on the East Coast are, you know, they're reaching their night a lot sooner, and people in the West Coast are still, you know, they're just having dinner. So it's really an interesting thing how many doors are opened up by these new changes. But, you know, like I said, man, I mean, it's come with so many challenges, and my heart breaks for all the companies that have done everything right, and then this unpredictable chaos comes in, and it's just, I mean, the statistics are staggering. Yeah. How many companies have suffered because of these changes, and just not, I mean, it's unpredictable. There's no way that anybody could have known this was coming. And, you know, it's crazy. So we feel extremely fortunate to even still be serving our customer base and still have the team we do. It's craziness, man. But this is still the best part of it, is talking astronomy and helping this community grow. And it's been, you know, my life mission, and will continue to be no matter what. And, you know, it's still, as I know it is yours as well, it's what we've always bonded on.
Oh, I know. Right. That's why I'm glad we're doing this again. It's my weekly Dustin fix, where we get to talk with and be together. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah, that mission. I mean, it's just, it got in my blood, man. And I always say, like, I'll never get it out, but it's just, I can't think, like, if you look back on your life and you're like, you know, really, like, if there's one thing I just did, I just shared this access to the universe with people. I gave people this perspective, you know, and regardless of what the number is, it's not even about quantity. It's just knowing that, like, there's no way to share that with somebody and it not be life-changing. So, you know, it's really, in my opinion, an extremely important mission. And we're just so very thankful to still be pushing ahead and pushing ahead strong, doing astronomy and helping people, you know, achieve those astronomy goals.
Agreed. And so as I was getting ready, when I was thinking about this episode, and I was thinking about, you know, among other things, some of the things you were just talking about, you know, why it's so important to be talking about this hobby and the universe and giving perspective. It's something that has always driven me too. I got to thinking about when we're thinking about a episode on the beginning amateur astronomy. I've talked about this a lot. We've even done episodes in the past about different aspects of this. I got to thinking about the idea that I think I'm kind of out of the loop on this, because what a beginner now in amateur astronomy isn't so clear cut. Back in the day, meaning ancient times when I got started, being a beginning astronomer meant that, or amateur astronomer meant that, you bought a telescope with an eyepiece and you went out and you tried to struggle with a planisphere to find out all the where the constellations were and where the cool stuff was, you know, the planets and you know, the nebulae that you wanted to see in the galaxies. And then you had to hunt and peck and try and find them. That's what being a beginner was back in the day, and it's evolved over time since then. But now I wanted to ask you, because you've got you're right in it. You're in the mix directly every single day. What are you seeing at OPT as far as what does it mean now to get started in the hobby? What are people doing that you're noticing?
You know, I have to steal a phrase we just used for describing the business, but rapid evolution. I mean, the beginner doesn't mean now what it did. Even when I got started, you know, 7-8 years ago, I guess it's been more than that now, man. Time just, for me, like, last couple of years don't mean anything in my mind yet.
If we're living in the time warp for
one
for
long
sure.
day.
It is. It's like, what day is it? I don't know.
I know.
What
I know.
Year is it? That's a better question.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, what I'm seeing, though, is that beginner used to mean, especially because the hurdles were so real and it was so expensive, you know, those two things, it was so challenging and so expensive that beginner truly meant beginner. It meant the best thing you could possibly do was go join your local club. And I used to give this advice all the time. Go join your local club. And before you ever try to buy anything, go use a bunch of other people's stuff. Go look through as many telescopes as you can. Go look through binoculars. Even go just, you know, get under dark skies with nothing. Just go, you know, just use your eyeballs and enjoy some dark skies. But I'm telling you, man, like the beginners now, because there's so much information and the access to the information is instant. And then some of the like world-class gear now is affordable and relatively simple to use. And, you know, the companies have done a lot better job about making things go together. And, you know, as far as like kits go and things of that sort. So people are becoming successful very, very quickly, where a lot of the beginners now, instead of having this trajectory of you'll go from a visual astronomer like we did to eventually looking, you know, through this, through longer magnifications visually, then to maybe putting a camera on it on a wide field system, then hoping that you can maybe get an image of like something like the moon, to eventually you're going to start doing tracked guided exposures and taking pictures of nebulae and galaxies. But this is a multi-year process. You know, to really be doing it well, you've got people now that within starting 5-6 months later are getting APODs. I mean, that curve now is just so flattened that it's just people get in, they're all in, and they're taking world-class images. And I won't say overnight, but I mean, almost, yeah, almost in a matter of months, they're taking world-class images.
Yeah, there really is a difference. I mean, it used to be, like you just pointed out, the difference between looking through an eyepiece and connecting a camera, an SLR, mm-hmm, with film in it to a telescope to get any kind of picture out of it was like the difference between an amateur and a professional, right? You really needed a lot of knowledge and skills to be able to get a decent picture out of your telescope. So nowadays, so there was definitely a distinction between a beginner visual amateur astronomer and a beginning astrophotographer, and that gap has really gotten closer. So are you seeing then, I mean, now they're, you could pretty much just buy any telescope, almost all of them have photographic capabilities with minimal effort. You can even put your cell phone on them now. Yeah, are you true. Noticing now that it's hard to distinguish between, well, is he getting into observing with an eyepiece or is he getting into
I think what happens imaging? Is that line that used to be kind of drawn in the sand between visual astronomy and then imaging, that line has been blurred. All of the equipment now is so good that you can buy, as you just mentioned, right? Like you can buy a really good telescope for whatever purpose it is that you want to use. And then even if it is just with your cell phone, you can start taking pictures immediately. And, or, you know, a lot of scopes can do both very, very well. And so people just go back and forth between the two a lot more seamlessly than that used to, I mean, used to not really be possible. You just went in one direction.
Yeah. Yeah. And you really had to kind of commit, because the dollar value being a good observer visually required some decent, really decent eye pieces and mm-hmm, a good optical train and really good mounts. Everything requires a good mount, but it was, you know, you really did need to commit, because a lot of times the investment was pretty significant either way. And not a lot of people had enough to do both. So, well, that's interesting because I think now if you're thinking about getting into the hobby and you're seeing all these great pictures on social media, I think that's driving a lot of people into the hobby. And I think that is probably an emphasis now over a visual observing because of that. You want to be able to share your results with people on Facebook or people on Instagram. So I think that might be another factor that's getting people more into the being able to take pictures and images with their equipment. So
I think both are truly, truly special. And you and I have talked about this a lot, but you know, visual, there's something special about it and I still really enjoy it. I mean, even you know, here at my I had a small get together here for my birthday recently. And we had a scope out and we didn't do any imaging at all. It was just visual. And we were showing people that had never seen Saturn and Jupiter We were showing it to them for the first time, and there were probably 7-8 people that looked through the telescope that had never seen it before. And I'm telling you, it was one of the most enjoyable nights because there's just nothing that beats that. There's nothing that, you know, and imaging is still where my heart is. I would count myself an astrophotographer before all other things, you know, science or visual. Like I love astrophotography. I love everything about it. But there's just nothing like the sharing aspect visually, showing somebody in their own eye, looking through an eyepiece where it's just a personal experience, witnessing another planet for the first time. And I don't know, you know, I don't know how you beat that with anything else that astronomy offers.
Well, I mean, what you're preaching to the choir with me, because absolutely you can't beat it. It's my response. That's the best way to go. But let's be honest. I mean, it's dying out. I mean, I think visual observing is one of those things that is just sort of a thing that's kind of nice. You do once in a while, but really everybody wants. And I'm telling you again, it's because of social media. They want to get out there and show everybody their stuff. Nobody really gathers around the telescope anymore to do any visual and go, oh, that's really cool. Now they want to post it on Instagram and Facebook and whatever it is and share it that way. And that's the real driver, I think. So I don't know. I mean, I guess I get it. I'm a little bit sad. But what do you mean?
You get it. Like you're a science communicator by trade. This is what you do. You share all day, every day. I'm here doing this with you because I also enjoy sharing. Sharing is what this is about. I think it's one of the best parts, if not the best part of the hobby. Literally, what I just said about the visual astronomy side was that what makes it so amazing is sharing, not just looking at Saturn and Jupiter myself over and over again, although it never ceases to amaze. It's the sharing aspect that I think is so incredible. So how can you not expect that the most shareable form of astronomy, which is clearly astrophotography, is going to be the one that gets the most attention?
I hear you, and I capitulate. I completely agree. It's the way of the future. It's the way things are going to be. I mean, even the brand new telescopes coming out now, some of the like the Unistellars and the Selenas, all of that stuff. You know, it's geared exactly toward that. So I get it, and I think that's the way of the future. I do, for a lot of reasons. Yeah. Not the least of which is the main thing we're going to get into here in this episode, which is light pollution and where to go and actually do some observing. What are some of the best places to go and do some observing? And what would you bring with you? So with that in mind, you know, let's talk a little bit about that. You know, where are good places to go observing? And when you do, what are some things we could bring with us as we go do that?
Yeah. So, well, there's two questions. The first, would be where, but also we probably need to address when, because as you pointed out,
That's true.
The skies are, you know, the dark skies are going away. It doesn't mean they're going to be gone in the next month or the next year or anything like that, but they are shrinking. And you can watch a light pollution map, even if you just Google light pollution map or go to lightpollutionmap.info, you can see the world and the light pollution around the world. And even if you just go to the United States, you take a look at it. I mean, it's almost like the United States is cut down the middle, running straight from North Dakota all the way through Texas.
Yeah.
And if you are east of that line, I mean, there are very few places outside of really West Virginia, and a very small chunk of New Hampshire and then Maine. There's really not a big chunk of dark sky anywhere on the east side of the country.
Yeah. And I mean, so go west, young man. that's definitely where the best skies are.
Yeah. It's challenging. And then you also get a lot of cloud cover and things. So the eastern side of the country has it pretty tough, but even the parts that would be in quotes, dark skies on the east side of the country, when you look at a light pollution map, you see that the west side of the country, I mean, it's a completely different realm. You know, like the it's color coded, obviously, as like the light pollution map. When you see it, it's got a key and kind of tells you
where. What are you looking at again?
Lightpollutionmap.info, but it shows all the major cities. So obviously, like Atlanta would be like white and red, and then it goes to yellow, then green, and then, you know, like a darker blue, and eventually, what you're trying to get to for a dark sky is like black or gray. That's what's showing the really dark skies. And there is almost no black or gray on the entire east side of the country. Running all the way, like I said, from North Dakota straight, if you drew a line straight down all the way over, it's almost non-existent.
Yeah.
Except for the mountains in West Virginia. But then on the west side of the country, there is more dark sky than there is light pollution. But you can tell that even in the dark sky areas, there are major cities, and those cities are expanding. Like if you look at Denver, for instance, you can see that growth is happening very quickly, and that those dark skies are getting smaller and smaller, and will continue to. So it's really for people that are interested in truly getting under dark skies, having that experience where, we talk about the sky is so dark that the Milky Way itself will cast your shadow on the ground. The time to do that is now. It's to make that trip sooner rather than later, while the dark skies are still as abundant as they are.
Yeah, I'm always reminded of I lived in Alamogordo, New Mexico for several years back when I was really young. And the memory of arriving in the evening, it was like 6 or 7 o'clock in the early evening. And I parked in a parking lot at the International Space Hall of Fame, which is right above the Tombaugh Planetarium where I was working, had a nice view of the city of Alamogordo. And you can see White Sands Missile Range out in the distance. And when I got out of my car and I just happened to turn west, I saw the most stunning sunset I had ever seen. It was deep red going out over the mountains behind the missile range. And it was just, it took my breath away. And then the stars came out. And really, it was the first time this was after living in Colorado for a long time in Boulder, where the skies are really good. I was still taken aback by it. So the desert Southwest is probably the premier area for observing in the United States for getting these really dark and amazingly bright skies. And it is absolutely worth it. As you get into the hobby, and let's say you're living somewhere up on the East Coast or in Florida, like I do, and you need to get over there, make a road trip. It's totally worth it to see this kind of thing, because as Dustin pointed out, this stuff is going away. And I would even say, and I don't mean to be a negative Nelly here, but it's not coming back. We're not getting these skies back. That once they're gone, I don't see anybody making any real effort to claw them back. So now's the time to get out there and try and experience these skies. And the best place to do that is west of the Mississippi, unfortunately for us on this side of the country. So I definitely second that motion. It's an amazing experience, and there's lots of places you can go that are like retreats. They specialize in this, right? I mean, aren't there places right. where, like in New Mexico, and I think Arizona? I think Drew was telling me about somebody in Arizona that does this. But even in California, where you are, there's places you can go.
Yeah, there are people all over. Even Ian Lauer is doing those retreats now with people and teaching them the sky out in California. And he's Ian Lauer Astro on Instagram. Anybody interested? But that's one of the OPT family, so always got to give him the love where we can.
Absolutely, Ian's awesome. But you'll have a great time. Yeah, no, he's funny beyond belief, man. You will definitely have fun.
Yeah, he is amazing. But anyway. it's one of those things I really do think is an important experience, especially for families. Like, go do it. You'll never regret it. And, it's not even an expensive trip. It takes you whatever it costs in gas and maybe a hotel room for the night or for the day. If you be up all night, but it's worth it. And like you just described, it really does. It knocks the breath out of you when you first see it. And Tony, one of my favorite videos you've ever done is actually one that you just did as your intro for Deep Astronomy. If listeners haven't seen this, you should go to Deep Astronomy on YouTube. Go to Tony's channel. It's an amazing channel for anybody that doesn't already go to it. But go check out Tony's channel in your intro video. You have you've got the perfect voice for this type of video, and you're like, on a dark, clear night. When the sun goes down, you will witness 3,000 stars, with your bare eyes. And when I heard that the first time, I'm thinking, is that it? Because, you know, it's just when you're out under those skies like that, it just, the number seems like there's no possible way you could even calculate it because it's just a wall of stars, no yeah. space in between them.
Some astronomers say you could see as I've heard some astronomers say you could see as many as 9,000. But I use three because I believe that's what most people will actually see.
Sure.
But yeah, under a reasonably dark sky, I don't know, like maybe in Denver or let's see, what's another one? Maybe in the outskirts of Denver or the outskirts of Phoenix or Flagstaff, well, you might see nine. But
regardless, it's not like you're going to sit there and count them all and even forget how would you know which ones you counted, you know? And I think what really makes it more challenging is as you get under dark skies, you get completely lost. You don't even know what you're looking at. I mean, I know the constellation. I'm out. Yeah. I'm talking astronomy all day, every day. I get under truly dark skies. I'm completely lost. Can't find anything. Can't find the North Star. Can't find anything.
Can't find the Big Dipper.
You can't find the Big Dipper. You can't find anything. And it's because the sky quite literally just turns into what looks like a cloud, you know, where it's just, it's all pushed together and it's just such a dense wall of stars that the only ones you really can pick out, and that's maybe why they say it's 3,000 to 9,000, are the truly bright exceptional stars. Because otherwise, I mean, it all just blends together as this big cloud coming over.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember the first time I actually got lost was again in New Mexico. It was like I was trying to find familiar constellations, Cepheus, Cassiopeia, mm-hmm. the ones that we all know. Is that Cassiopeia? I think it is.
No.
You know, so it's like, I even got a compass out once to make sure I was facing north.
Yeah.
Just to make sure I had it right because you can get really lost in it. So if you don't live in the western half of the nation, which mm-hmm. I guess most of us don't. I don't know what the population distribution is in the United States, but I know a lot of people live on the east of the Mississippi River. And my advice to you guys would be, if you're in, say, like I'm in Florida, it's crowded. The night skies suck. And this is the best time of year. We're coming up on it now. November through March is about the best time to do sky gazing here, not only because the nights are longer, but it's the dry season. We don't get a lot of clouds, and it's the best time to go out and observe here. But I live next to a city where I could see the light dome, right? So it's in my way. It's directly in the north, northwest, and so I'm struggling with that. What I do is I've noticed that the one good thing about Florida, I mean, there's a lot of good things, okay, but there's a lot of bad things too. But Florida is that there's a lot of state parks here and there's a lot of national forest. I'm lucky enough to live next to the Ocala National Forest, which has no development in it. And there's several state parks in there. And what I've started doing is I volunteer some of my time to some of the state parks on Saturdays and Friday nights to give star talks at the parks for free, because they're generally located in an area where there's not a lot of development. So my advice to you is, if you live in an area like this and there's a state park within, say, a reasonable driving distance to you, start there. Go check it out at night. A lot of state parks are closed at night, so you'd have to go in the area around it. But if they will let you in, then go in the evenings and see what the skies are like, at least in the region, if you can't get into the park. Exactly. So that would be one piece of advice. There's most of us have a state park or even a city park at some point. I'm not going to speak to safety. I don't know how safe some of these city parks are, but you know, you have to judge that on your own. But that would be a place to start to see what the night skies. They're probably going to have the best night skies in your region. A lot of people.
And it's always
going to
be
choice.
Darker than, you know, the neighborhood.
Yeah,
that you're in, exactly. or you know, the city.
At least try to get away from streetlights where you're not shining directly on your face, if you can do that.
Right, right, exactly. Or away from, you know, the football stadium next door or whatever, you know, the airport.
Exactly. It's amazing how just cutting out directly shining streetlights in your face helps.
Right.
If you can somehow put up I actually had put up curtains on little poles in one of the neighborhoods I lived in, because it was a street light right across my front yard, and to block it out, I would put up a little barrier to it. And just that, just getting rid of that direct shining in my face light, I was able to see a lot more stars. So that helps in a light polluted area. And then you, what if nothing else, what it does is it keeps your night vision as good as it's going to be. Because every time you look in the direction of that street light, your irises are going to close up. So it's nice to have something that doesn't, you know, constantly cause you to snap your iris shut every time you look near light. And that'll help. That'll, you'll see more stars that way. And then if you're a visual, if you're doing this visually, then, you know, getting behind that screen and looking through the eyepiece, you'll see a lot more through that eyepiece.
Yeah. And this is still something that can be done. I mean, pointing out you have a 20 inch mm-hmm. telescope and it's not wasted. And that's a huge, I mean, it's a half meter telescope. It's huge. What, 7 feet tall or something. But it's still definitely not wasted even in Florida. And I'm looking at the map right now, and Florida is one of, if not the most challenging states on the east side of the country. I mean, there are no areas that reach the darkest level other than the ocean, of course, and none that even reach the second darkest area. So the entire state of Florida is a challenge. And out where you are, man, it looks like you're standing on the surface of the sun.
It's pretty bad.
It's pretty bright, and it's still not wasted there, because there's a little secret. You know, the jewels of the night sky are going to be the things that are bright enough that you can see them from these light polluted skies anyway. If you just, if you just use those little tricks, like what you just mentioned, get the direct light out of your face, out of the view from the telescope, and it's going to make a huge difference. And when you're going after things like Saturn and Jupiter and the moon, you know, even Venus, you're going to be able to see those. They're so bright in the night sky that, you know, you can see these things from cities.
Yeah.
So it's not like you shouldn't do this just because you're, you know, on the east side of the country, or you happen to be in Orlando or Atlanta. You can still do this stuff, and you can still really enjoy the things that are the most enjoyable aspects of visual astronomy anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's another thing I've taken to doing. You really can't, it's a kind of a cheat, because I live in Florida. I can do this. I go out into the middle of lakes and rivers on a boat and at night. And of course, this is really only good for visual observing with maybe binoculars, but not a telescope. And I'll just sit out there and look up. Though, because it's in the middle of a body of water, I'm protected from a lot of stars or light pollution that's in the area. So some of the darkest skies are actually out in the middle of the water. And I've thought about this, because I have a houseboat, and I've thought about what would my telescope do on that if I tried to observe. And of course, the answer is, at any kind of high magnification, it would be completely unusable, because the boat would be rocking and I wouldn't be able to see anything. So it's not a practical way to do it with a telescope. But for visual, just naked eye observing, that's some things I do. And if you're a beginner, what I think is an important thing to do is to get a connection to the night sky in whatever way you can. And if you're in one of these light polluted areas, I highly recommend just going for a walk somewhere, looking up, try to pick the darker areas. I know you got to be concerned about safety in some cities and stuff like that, so take the appropriate precautions, but make that connection, and then you'll be like, well, what is that? And so I have this, I don't know what app you use, Dustin, but I have an app on my phone called Skyview. And it's the free version. And I like it because I can say, what is that? Sometimes I don't even know. It's like, is that Jupiter? I'm not sure. So I'll start the app and I'll point my phone up at it in the in Skyview. And what I like about Skyview is that it gives me this real big cartoon view of whatever it is I'm looking at. This like a big view of Jupiter. But it also plays this really cheesy planetarium music in the background, and I kind of like it. So I listen to that and watch and just sort of point my phone around at the sky too. So yeah, maybe that's weird.
You do astronomy for the music.
Too much. What's that?
I said you do astronomy for the music.
Yeah, I do. I mean, there's some art, you know, some kind of music. A lot of electronic music really gets me in the mood for astronomy. Like the old guys, like Vangelis or Jean-Michel Jarre. These electronic artists that were around in the 70s and 80s that really resonate with me. I love that crap. And this was kind of like that. It's kind of cheesy space music in this app, but you know, anyway, it's Skyview. It's the free version. I didn't even pay for it, but Those help.
Yeah,
those,
and
those,
I don't
the apps that you can download are helpful.
Yeah, no, those apps are great, and you can get the free. Like I have Sky Safari, same idea, same kind of thing. And there's a free version. But yeah, holding your phone up and just being able to point, what is that? I wonder what that is, and being able to see that and all the reference stars around it. You know, it's really nice. And then being able to click on it and get some information about it, it's just a really fun way to explore the sky, even if you don't have a telescope or binoculars or anything else, you know. But I think the big challenge for people is generally just getting started. Once people get started, they're off and running. But if they get started in the wrong way, it becomes one of those things where it, you know, it just feels like, it's too intimidating. It's not fun. It's frustrating. This stuff doesn't work, or I don't know how it goes together. And that's where I think that's the death of a lot of budding astronomers, is just the frustration or intimidation factor.
Yeah. And that is a great segue into the next segment of our episode, which is we don't want to just give you advice on how to do astronomy or how to, what our opinions are on looking up or taking images or doing a visual observing, whatever it is. We also want to give you some concrete things that you can do. And so we're going to talk a little bit about some gear that you can get that we would recommend that goes along with what we were just talking about, which is you want to get the right start. So OPT has put together these packages, which are designed to help minimize this sort of barrier, any kind of barrier, and to get you started off on the right foot. And so we're going to talk about those for a little bit right now. And hopefully you guys will check those out in the links that we're sending you. So Dustin, what are we talking about here? What are these kits that we've got going?
Yeah. So, you know, we were very resistant to this for a long time. When we first started the podcast, and this is just a full transparency moment, and it was actually something that we found that we were causing more problems than good with, because when Tony and I started this and we were talking with Jenny, we're like, well, look, this should exist. These conversations should exist, and we should be able to answer questions and make this easy for people, but it shouldn't be like a salesy avenue. This should be something that's just like bring astronomy to people. And, you know, share the love of astronomy for people. And the reason that like these packages came into existence was actually the reverse. It was the constant comments like, hey, I come to your podcast expecting that you guys are going to give me some answers on gear.
We tried to stay away from that.
Yeah. And then you don't. And we're like, we're sorry. We're trying to do this the right way. We're trying to be white hat. We don't know what to do.
We don't want to sell you stuff all the time. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But we found that it was actually causing more harm than good than to just put it together for people and make it easy. And so at the request of multiple listeners and, you know, a few affiliates even, trying to simplify it is the goal. And that's exactly what this is. It's in line with that goal. And so I want to be clear that these packages, there's multiple packages. And the reason for that is because people have different goals and they have different budgets and they have, you know, different things they're really trying to get out of astronomy. And so the first one was, you know, built on the assumption that some people are not going to just be head over heels in love with the hobby from the second they get in, kind of the way we were. We got in and we knew then we're never getting out. But that's not going to be the experience for everybody. Some people are like, I want to experience the moon. I want to experience Jupiter. But I also don't have the time or energy or just availability to be out every night doing this. You know, and so that's kind of what these packages are, is like a way to sample astronomy and see, or at least this first package, this beginner package, is a way to see like, do I really like, is this as powerful as I think it's going to be without spending a ton of money, you know? And so we put one together that is a scope we had designed specifically for this to be inexpensive, but still be adequate for, you know, and beyond just adequate, you know, phenomenal views of the moon, Jupiter, and Saturn, and then the brighter objects, like you'll be able to see the Orion Nebula and then Andromeda, but not something that's going to be like a big telescope like what Tony has, where you're going to basically see anything in the universe you want to see. This is more, here's a budget telescope that's super portable. Throw it in the car. It's super rugged. The kids aren't going to break it. But it's really inexpensive. So the whole package is called the Beginning Astronomy Telescope Starter Kit. So on the OPT website, it's really simple. If you just type in beginning kit, it's going to pull it up. But it comes with the telescope and everything needed. This is a manually operated telescope. You don't have to have a battery or anything like that. Literally just point it at a light in the sky and look through it. And then from there, you know, you'll see that light, focus it to whatever your vision is. And that's it. I mean, really, really simple. Also comes with a laser pointer, a beanie, a headlamp, because we know the first thing that people were going to do, we were kind of like, should we put a headlamp in there? One of our team said, the first thing people are going to do is they're going to get excited. They're going to go to a star party with this thing. And if they don't have a headlamp, they're going to be turning on their phone light and they're going to get kicked out of the star party.
That's right.
So put the red headlamp in the kit. So that's in there. And then a cleaning cloth. And that whole kit is $149. And it's been, you know, it's been exactly what people were asking us for. Like the people that have gotten it have, you know, truly been extremely happy and grateful for it, because it's not, you know, $1,000 entry point. It's not a, you know, like a lot of the kits before were, or $2,000 to jump in. It's like, hey man, $150, try it. If you don't like it, it's not, you know, it's not, you're not out $1,000. Right. But we haven't seen anybody yet that said they didn't love astronomy.
Right. Yeah, this is about the price of a pair of binoculars. So what I like about it is that, you know, the telescope that we're talking about is incredibly lightweight. So if you don't have good skies where you live, you need to be able to just pack that thing up in your car, even carry it on your shoulder, in a little shoulder case or whatever, and just walk or ride to where you're going to go. This is light enough for that. Right. And the laser pointer is cool because it's a laser pointer. And
just, that's my favorite part of the whole kit, man. But it's my favorite part of any kit.
I know, right?
Like a child, I get a laser pointer.
Yeah. He goes, I see the Big Dipper. And your girlfriend goes, I don't see it. So, okay, well, let me pull out my laser pointer and I'll show you. See, here's the two stars. Here's the pointer stars. These point to the Big Dipper or the North Star. And then there's these other stars.
Yeah. You're out there calling things out that don't even exist just so you can point stuff out in the night sky to everyone. You know,
he's pulling the laser pointer again.
Yeah. You just have to be careful. We definitely need to say this. You just have to be careful. Do not ever, ever, ever shine this thing at airplanes. That is a federal offense.
Oh, yeah. You'll get arrested for that stuff.
Yeah. Do not ever shine an astronomy laser pointer at an airplane. That is not a good idea. So if you have the kids outside using the laser pointer, make sure that they're being watched and they're not shining that thing in an airplane.
Yeah. I mean, the refractor itself is, you know, 70 millimeters. That's really good for planets and seeing some of the brighter things, the moon, of course, things like that. So it's a good way to get started. It's easy to use. I mean, you just point one look at it and you'll know how to use it. It's just like using.
That was the whole point, man. And that's what the team was after. And that's why they went out and they just did it, you know, for Universal Astro, because it was just like, it's got to be intuitive. The second you see it, like you just said, you have to know, like, okay, there's nothing intimidating. If I point this at the moon, I'm going to see the moon. I don't have to learn any motors. I don't have to learn any software. I don't have to learn anything. Just point and look and you're done.
Yeah. It doesn't have a mount. It doesn't have a clock drive. I mean, it does have a tripod, but,
It has a tripod. It does not have any electronics at all. It is just point and look.
Yeah. What's the eyepiece that comes with it?
I think it's 25 millimeters.
All right. So you're looking at, So it's a 25 millimeter eyepiece. And so, and it's got a 400 millimeter focal length. So you divide 400 in, or divide 25 into 400. And that tells you the magnification you're looking at. I'm not going to do it in my head right now, but
we also put it has the 25, which is the standard. That's what everybody's going to use for most things and getting the full picture of the moon. But we also put a 10 millimeter eyepiece in there. So that's included for, when people want to, because on 70 millimeters, you know, you can get away with that, 10 millimeter eyepiece and see, you know, more detail on the craters or see, you know, the moons of Jupiter as they're passing over or, you know, that kind of stuff. So it does have the 25 and the 10.
Cool. All right. And the another thing I like about the headlamp. I have about 10 headlamps at my house here, and none of them are rechargeable. So I love the fact that this one is, because you just, you know, plug it in with a USB port and you recharge it. So to me, that's a big deal. I look for that now in a lot of things, is the stuff rechargeable, because I'm sick of throwing away batteries. So that's another real plus for the headlamp as well. So altogether, pretty good kit, I think. I mean, this is, it's portable. You want that with something, you want to take it anywhere. It's easy to use. One look at it, you know how to use it. And you got to have something to wear on your head, because, man, you know, we're coming up on winter, and I don't have to worry about it as much as you guys do up in the north, because wintertime is cold, especially if you're in Maine. So all that will work as well. So we got another kit too, don't we? I like this one.
Which one? We have quite a few. Which one?
Well,
which
one? Is there? Oh, I'm sorry. So this one's a Star Party Essentials Adventure Kit.
Yeah. So that's more for people looking for power. So what generally happens, this is what we see, you know, 99 times out of 100, is that people get started and then they get amazed. You know, they can't believe, when you look at Saturn for the first time, you're going to be hooked. Because when you see the rings, it just doesn't, like, it's hard for your brain to understand. It's still hard for me to understand when I see it. But once you see that stuff, you want to see more and then more and more, because you realize, like, the whole universe is full of this stuff, and you can go out and be an explorer every night, you know, by just setting up. And so then you start getting into things on a deeper level, and you want to go to star parties, you want to be out. And so power becomes something that, you know, people generally need, because they're going to get a motorized telescope, you know, with go to, which is just say, like, hey, you tell the telescope, go to Jupiter, and you watch it move, and it goes to Jupiter on its own and tracks it across the sky. And so the team designed these kits to be that power supply for these telescopes, or for the laptop, if you need to power a laptop or a cell phone throughout the night. That's exactly what these are, is power kits for star parties. So it comes with the lithium battery. And again, you know, the other aspects we were just talking about, the beanie, the headlamp, and the laser pointer, because we're going to put a laser pointer in anything I can. Cause that's,
yeah, man. Yeah.
That's
man.
My favorite part.
So I know we need to grow up, but still, you know, I'm sorry, but lasers are fun.
Yeah.
Will it come up if they do the beginner search on the website?
Yeah. Yeah. So actually on the website, all the way through Christmas, at least, we're going to leave up, we have it listed as stocking stuffers for amateur astronomers on the homepage as a banner. But it pulls up all of the kits that they've put up recently, that are, you know, these, kind of beginner to intermediate level kits, and then all of the more advanced kits are included on the homepage under Astro Kits. So there's two different places to find kits on our website, but all of that stuff is pulled up. And yeah, I mean, there's quite a bit. I mean, it gets as detailed all the way into, like, getting light pollution filter kits, and, you know, in an entire, like, work maintenance bench kit that has everything from, you know, like, measuring back focus to, you know, even adapters. You know, adapters get locked together. It's got, like, strap wrenches and everything you can possibly imagine, cleaning solutions to maintain a kit. There's kits for that purpose as well. So these kits are just, they're designed to be a solution to real astronomy problems, whether that problem be, where do I get started, or how do I maintenance my telescope, or, you know, even just, hey, I already have a camera and a lens. I just want a platform to put it on that's going to eliminate star trails so I can track across the sky. Like, there are kits for all of that stuff on these pages.
Yeah. And I can't tell you how helpful that is, because when you're just starting out in a new hobby, one of the things that, you know, can get real confusing really fast is, like, well, what should I have? And what am I going to end up buying later that I wish I had that I didn't buy this time? And so these kits kind of solve that problem. And I'm going to tell you now, the difference between these two kits is, one, you know, there's one with the telescope, the other with this power bank. But let me tell you about this power bank. You could use these for just about anything else you could think of. It comes with a lithium ion battery, which is a 42. I can't believe, I love how they do this. 42,000 milliwatt amp hour. Now, that's just 42 amps, really. But this is useful because it's got a 100 watt inverter and, built in with it for AC power. Now, these things are useful with not just charging your phone or anything else, but whenever you're traveling at all, having one of these power banks around, I guarantee you, is handy, because I have the Celestron one, and I have a couple of off-brand ones that I got from Amazon, and all of those are very, very useful. And this one, for the price, is better than all of those. So I highly recommend having just a power bank handy, no matter what you do, even for storms at your house, or if you have power outages, whatever. They really are handy. And of course, you're going to need it if you start getting clock drives and cameras and all that stuff to plug in. So,
you know, it's funny, we just surprised Trevor Astro Backyard. He's an awesome guy, but we just surprised him with one, and it just got in, and I saw he posted a story about it today, actually. So it won't be today when this podcast goes live, but it's today for the people that follow Trevor, and I feel like at this point everybody does.
Yeah, he does. He's got a huge following.
Yeah, he's a great human, man. Just a good dude.
But, he really is. Yeah.
He just got his, and he's like, the post just said, "Finally, portable power."
Yeah. That's right.
You feel like we do.
Because
I was carrying a car battery around for a long time when I was running my imaging rigs out in the deserts, and that neither feels safe nor practical.
Got this big honking lead acid battery. Yeah. I used to put it on a little hand cart, one I carried around, just so I didn't have to lift it up and just, drag it around that way. And yeah, man, they're heavy. These lithium ion batteries are nowhere near as heavy, and they are way more power for the punch. And of course, they last a lot longer as well in terms of recharge cycles. So,
And your chance of dying by using it is zero. Whereas, I always felt like when you're fiddling around in the dark with this massive car battery, I was always like, man, if I survive tonight, I'm going to have an awesome photo.
Just especially in the dark with like one of these things, like 800 amp hours, some of them. And so you're like, whoa, that's pretty crazy.
Exactly.
So, definitely. And these are really practical. Safe. Yeah.
And they're a lot more like they handle the weather a lot better too than just like a car battery. That's not meant to be set in the sand and all of that. These things can handle it. The other one, it's really not a good idea to go out into the desert and get dew and everything else all over a car battery.
Not a good idea. Yeah, and I just can't say enough about how handy portable power is in this day and age now. You just use it for everything. So it's definitely a decent kit, and want to check that out. So
yeah, and the whole goal here is just solve problems. Like, I mean, it's just – it's not important. Like if people don't want to start with motorized controls and all of that, it's really not important. In my, at least I don't believe it is. I hear a lot of people, and I see a lot of comments all the time, people saying, look, you're going to be a lot more successful if you just get GoTo right out of the gate. And while I do agree that GoTo is just ultra convenient, I mean, being able to just say, GoTo Andromeda, and then it's there, or even better, just typing it in on your computer and running your entire rig from your computer, the cameras, everything. Like that is beautiful. And that is how I run my systems. But getting started, I mean, that's a lot of investment for somebody that's never done the hobby or never tinkered. I really think the way to do it when you're really just getting started is to grab something durable that you don't have to baby, that you can just throw in the car and set up and do exactly what I was talking about doing on my birthday out here, is like pull people over and say, really get the shared experience. Say, come over here and take a look at this. You're literally not going to believe what you see. I'm not even going to tell you what it is. Just take a look at this and show somebody the craters on the moon for the first time, or Saturn or Jupiter. That's going to be tough to beat.
And if you're in any kind of place that's got foot traffic, people are going to come up to you and say, what you looking at?
Yeah. You go to a local event of any kind, and you plop that thing down and say, come take a look through this telescope. I feel like who's going to say, no, I just, I'm firmly against that.
Yeah. It's totally COVID safe too, because you're not touching anything.
Right.
So yeah. Okay. All righty. Well, that is so. I highly recommend you guys check these out. The links are in the description box of the videos, and also on the OPT website. So definitely check these out. Do you have anything else you want to add?
No, I'm just, man, I'm so excited to be doing these again. I can't wait for next week. And just a little hint. This isn't a hint. This is just exactly what it will be. But next week we're going to be talking about observatories, backyard observatories.
Yep.
And exactly how to, what it means, and the different types, which ones are really, really great, and which ones can be money pits and devastating.
So, yes. It's a topic I have spent many decades on, as I've built several in my backyards in various places I've lived. So it's a topic we've gotten a lot of requests on from you guys. And so we're gonna talk about that next time.
And I have seen a lot of mistakes. I've seen six-figure mistakes people have made that just, they didn't know it was six figures at the time, but they just kept trying to solve that problem. And it, you know, it added up and added up. And we're going to talk about how to avoid that stuff. If you're interested in a backyard observatory, how to do it right the first time and avoid all those pitfalls.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you, Dustin, very much. And on behalf of Dustin, I'm Tony Darnell. Thank you all so much for listening. And as always, keep looking up.
Space Junk is produced by Deep Astronomy and sponsored by OPT Telescopes in Carlsbad, California. Please visit our website at spacejunkpodcast.com. Also, please send any questions and comments or ideas for new episodes to spacejunk@deepastronomy.com.